It takes more than upgrading from a standing desk to a cartwheeling desk to be a great engineer. This is episode 398 of the Soft Skills Engineering Podcast. I'm your host, Jameson Dance.
I'm your host, Dave Smith.
Soft Skills Engineering is a weekly advice show about all the non-technical things that go into the technical field of software development. And I think I have a specific image in my mind of what a cartwheeling desk is. You know those like circus rings where they, you kind of like spread your arms and legs out in them and roll around.
Yeah.
And if you're good, you somehow don't crush your fingers.
Right.
No. Yes. Way I don't understand. That's somehow there's a desk there, and then that's a cartwheeling desk.
That's exactly the image I had, except it's mounted inside one of those like NASA three ring spinny aroundy things.
Oh, yeah. 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 So it's like, can you find this bug and not vomit at the same time?
maybe this is actually a really good idea. It's like, it turns out the human brain can find bugs when exposed to different vectors of gravity.
Ah, yes. It keeps you from getting stuck. It helps you think outside the box more.
Yes, exactly.
When your brain is scrambled.
If a whole industry of agile consultants can sell their services, we can sell this product.
Yeah, and we will. Next episode, look out for it.
This episode is sponsored by Red Hat Compiler, an original podcast from one of our favorite companies that explores all tech topics, big, small, and strange. We'll hear more about them in the middle of the show, but go check out Red Hat Compiler. All right. Jameson, you want to thank our patrons?
I do. I want to thank Dan from Drone Deploy, Chase W. Norton, TypeHero.dev, Never Is Not Just a Crater on Mars, Flamingo Emoji, I Like Chicken, I Like Liver, Meowmix, Meowmix, Please Deliver, Trash Panda, TheComputerScienceBook.com, Valentin at Datafold, Santa Hopar, Kenzie Dodds, I lost my place, sorry, Jenny Kim, Owen Shardle, Craig Motland, The Stochastic Parrot, Patreon.com, We're Hiring, Ira Chan, Question Mark, Jonathan King, WebTow, Awesome End-to-End Testing, The Unsettling Nature of Not Knowing the Content at WilliamAngel.net, Travis, Braden Keynes, John Grant, and Cody Sale. Thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate you, and you appreciate us, and that's why we do the thing we just did.
That's true.
If you want to join this group, who have at times been called illustrious, and if need be, can be called upon to do a heist, much like a crew, then you can go to softskills.audio and click support us on Patreon. Any amount will get you an invite to the Slack team, and more will get you more. And go find out what it is.
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
Dave, would you like to read our first question?
Yes, I would. Let's see here. This comes from Senor Dev. With a tilde over the N, Senor Dev. How do you mentor a junior level contractor? My company has been hiring a lot of contractors lately. Sometimes they hire out a full team from the contracting shop to build a particular feature. Other times it's an individual developer, but with the same general mandate. Implement some specific set of features from our backlog over X number of months, then move on to the next project somewhere else. Generally this happens when we have extra budget that needs to be spent for the year, etc. It works well enough when the contractor is experienced and able to self-direct and focus on just getting the work done, but sometimes the contractor is less experienced and needs lots of guidance and mentorship. Hiring and mentoring a less experienced full-time developer is a long-term investment. Over time, that person will become more productive and hopefully stay with the company long enough to provide a net benefit. But when the person is only contracted for a short time, it seems we're effectively paying the contracting agency for the opportunity to train their employee for them. As a senior engineer slash tech lead, should I devote the same amount of time to mentorship and growth of these contractors, or should I just manage their backlog and make sure they only get assigned tasks that are within their ability to finish before the contract runs out?
I can tell you, if you're in the United States, legally, you have to, you better not be mentoring them or they can claim they're actually employees of your company and then
you
able to receive benefits.
Right. Then you owe payroll taxes.
Yeah. So if you don't want to mentor them, see if you can find somebody in legal or HR and mention this. Say, hey, we've got these contractors that seem to need a lot of mentoring.
Tell
you've been spending a lot of time with them, and
suddenly you don't have a contractor problem. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, contracting is sort of like the cold, uncaring face of direct transactional kind of business stuff where you're really supposed to be paying someone for value much more, even much more directly than as an employee, where there's a little bit of kind of responsibility for long term.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I would not want to spend my time where it would not return to me, I guess. Even though that feels kind of callous to say. That you should not have to train up contractors. You should need to tell them how your specific system works. But if you have to teach them new skills, then you have hired the wrong contractor.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, but it's like you don't really have a mentorship problem here. You actually have a contractor selection problem. You know, when the company chooses the wrong people. I mean, one of the advantages of contracting is that, as a buyer anyway, is that you have this supposedly well-trained talent pool to choose from who can get in, get paid, and get out. And if you don't have that because they're not getting the job done, then maybe you should get a discount, I guess, on the contract.
Maybe they should pay you.
Yeah.
I don't know if a discount is worth it. It's
what if you make
if
a
it's
side...
time away from... Oh, yeah, a contractor trainer.
Yeah, what if on the side you sign an agreement with the contracting shop to say, look, I will mentor your people and I promise they will end up better engineers that you can charge more for and get more business at the end, but you're going to have to give me a kickback for all this mentorship I'm doing.
That sounds so illegal. Outrageously illegal. But that's all I have to say about that. I don't know. I can't think of anything else. Yeah, I don't know. I have worked with contractors and not treated them as contractors. And it's too late. You can't get me. Mm-hmm. I've escaped. But it always felt gross to like shun them and just, I don't know, airmail them like requirements and look away when they looked me in the eyes and stuff. But that is what you're supposed to do technically. And with those folks, it was sort of like, we all kind of knew the deal, and it was they were experienced contractors. I knew they weren't going to take advantage of the situation, and it was just going to make them more effective to know more and have more context. But I did not have to like teach them how to program.
Yeah,
it was just normal team stuff. Like, I don't know, talk to this person to learn how to debug this specific system or stuff like that.
Yeah, and this specific system that only we have at our company that I could never expect a contractor to know about before they joined.
Yeah.
That all sounds really reasonable. And I was kind of thinking the pragmatic answer to this question, like if I was a business owner here, would be to create really robust onboarding documentation so that you can scale this process. Because essentially what you have here is a repeating business process that requires a human touch every time it happens. And whenever you see a repeating business process that requires a human touch, I should make an acronym of that, by the way, repeating business process that requires a human touch. Whenever you have one of those, you need a scalable solution. And documentation to me is like the first tool I would reach for is like super robust, very comprehensive documentation that explains to them all the ins and outs they need to know so that anytime they reach out to you with a question, you've got a URL like ready to go in your holster, like pacha, URL to the docs, you know, for everything they ask.
Yeah. The acronym is RBPTHRTHT. Repeating business problem that where's the... That requires human touch.
There you
go. I forgot what the R was for.
The sign of a great acronym is when you can't pronounce it or remember what it stands for. It's like the perfect, it's the perfect acronym.
This is how movements form, Dave.
Yes, I know. Can you imagine?
I can't pronounce it because I'm unfamiliar with its ways, but soon yes, I will become
soon.
A convert.
Right, after you are inducted.
Then RBPTHRTHT will flow off the tongue. You'll hear it at conference venues, echoing in the halls of coffee shops in Silicon Valley.
It is, I'll tell you, it is exhausting to have a revolving door of people that you need to help ramp up on stuff, come in and go, come in and go. And this is actually one of the main reasons, not main, but it was a secondary reason that I left one of the large tech companies, was that we had so many people and we were hiring constantly. And I would meet with people and they had no interest in getting to know me at all. But I was responsible for ramping them up, getting them to productive, and then I would never see them again. And it wasn't that I was like their onboarding buddy per se. It was just like even just interacting with other teams, which is kind of reminiscent of what this question asker is asking. And boy, did it wear me down. I just, it felt like the human part of my humanity was gone. All I had left was the itty from the
human. the cold metallic robot heart.
Yes, that's all that was left. It was so rough. So I feel this, and I think over time I would eventually get demotivated and I would stop really investing in getting these people up to speed. Now, having said that, I work with a team of contractors who are more like permanent contractor. Like the only reason they're contracting is because they're not in the United States and we are not incorporated there, and we do hire through an agency, but they are like long-term, multi-year people. So we treat them like team members, unless the IRS asks, at which point they are definitely just contractors.
We treat them exactly as required by all
regulations.
Laws and,
yes.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But in my heart, and only in my heart and not on my tax returns, in my heart, they are friends and people that I love, who I pick up at the airport when they come to visit and who I invest just tons of effort into. But I got to tell you, if they were changing faces every 2 weeks because they were in and out, I would have a really hard time doing what I do.
I'm kind of imagining like the grizzled war veteran who just is used to seeing these rookies come in and get chewed up and spit out. And they're like, I don't have time to learn your names. You won't even be here tomorrow. And
yep.
Sort of the vibe I have.
Exactly.
So you need to get crack special forces, if we're continuing this metaphor.
Okay.
That you don't have to take care of?
Because they're just
stuff.
They're just good and they do
they're just,
things.
They're just good, yeah. Yeah.
They don't need you to get to know them and learn the names of their kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember their faces, etc.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I do think I would express, if this is slowing you down, it's possible this could be slowing you down overall, that the value you get out of this person is less than the time spent trying to train them. And that means the company is spending money to slow you down. It's not even just that you're slowing down.
Yeah.
So I would give that feedback and say, hey, like, I'd rather have no contractor than this just short time with a pretty junior person that you pay for and don't get anything out of.
And I can attest from personal experience that engineering management responds very swiftly when you say things like, I'd rather pay this person to sit and do nothing than to need my hand-holding constantly, because now I'm only getting half my work done and they're not getting any work done and creating problems. I actually said those words once. No, I didn't say them. I had a coworker who said those words to our CTO at a previous company. And this is after weeks of me trying to complain. You know, I don't know what I said or if I said it very clearly, but we had a couple of contractors like this. They needed tons of hand-holding, and when they did finally ship work, it just created more bugs that we had to go clean up. And so I was like, I complained about this to my CTO, but he did nothing. And then weeks later, one of my more experienced coworkers went to the CTO and said, hey, listen, can we change our policy to just pay this contractor to sit at the computer but not actually contribute any code? It would make our lives easier. And literally the next day, the contract was terminated. And I was like, whoa, those are the magic words.
Oh, yeah. So now you know the magic words.
Yeah, just say those.
Use them wisely.
One thing in this question that stood out to me was that it works well when the contractor is experienced and able to self-direct. I'm like, okay, great. That tells me that you've actually got a pool of people who are capable of being excellent contractors. But what that also tells me is that when you do occasionally pick up the person whose skills don't line up with the job requirements, you can actually point to a baseline of good performance and say, hey, this person doesn't meet the normal standard of quality that we expect from your contracting agency. So please, you know, please swap them out for someone who does. And maybe that needs to become part of your process, is there's a little bit of an assessment period, you know, what I think our European friends would call a probation, but not really like a probation. But the same principle where you say, let's give this person a week on the job to see how they do. And after a week, we'd like an opportunity to formally decline continuing have them on the project.
Yeah. Well, have we answered the question?
I think so. And I'm just glad I survived without being ousted as the bad contractor in the podcast.
Well, I spent a lot of work training you up, Dave.
It's true. You've really invested in me. Hey, Jameson, we've been talking about this podcast from Red Hat called Compiler. I guess people might think we're kind of obsessed with it, and we are. What do you want to tell people about it today?
I want to tell them about a new episode I just listened to from Compiler called Warning Signs, which is about some red flags or disasters or bad things that have happened in people's careers, which in some ways is the subject of this show. So it felt like it was very synergistic. I don't know. There's something about hearing like a good prod is destroyed story that warms my heart.
You particularly like those.
I love them. Yeah. And the compiler is good at storytelling about engineering. I think that's one of my favorite things about it.
Yeah. And let's not miss this opportunity to say how much better they are than us at production quality.
If we keep saying it, then it becomes like we're doing bad production ironically.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, no, we know it's bad and we choose to because we're cool. I think that's how it works.
Right. But seriously, if you want to listen to a podcast about software development from people who actually know what they're doing and sound great and tell good stories, Red Hat Compiler is the podcast for you.
Yep. Go check it out. All right. Should I read our next question?
Please do.
This is from an anonymous listener who says, "Hello, I have a really hard time not attaching my identity to my work. I know I'm not supposed to, but I really take pride in what I do, and I feel like if I don't, my performance would take a hit. But where this really bites me is taking it really personally when things go wrong, like when a customer submits a bug report and I find it was something that I wrote, or when I take down prod and have to involve a whole bunch of C-suite people to address and postmortem the issue. I understand humans make mistakes, but it eats me up so much inside every time. I know all these things, but I have a hard time really internalizing them, especially when things go south at work. What are some practical ways I can train myself to approach things without emotion?"
Yes, taking the human element out again.
Yeah. We just covered that. You gotta grind it off. Sandblast it off by having a rotating door of coworkers for years.
Just embrace the meaninglessness of your work and stop caring about anything. Just wake up.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was just thinking about a coworker at a previous job. We were kind of we were just chatting one time, and both said that part of what we were struggling with is that it was hard to care because of some attributes of the environment that we worked in, mm-hmm. but caring was part of what we were good at. And if we didn't care, then we would be bad. Like, we weren't good enough at the job without caring to make up for it.
Yeah.
So we were wrestling with a similar problem of like, if I just don't care, then
what
I'm not
going
to do as good of work.
That's a good point. That's really interesting. I'm also...
We never solved that. Yeah. I don't know. Neither of us work there anymore, I think. So that is a solution in one way.
So you're saying find a place that what? Makes it easier to care?
It's easier to care.
Yes. Oh, wait. Now I know what company you're talking about. And I felt the same way about a company I left at around the same time. It's hard to care because it was hard to make big impact because the company was so huge.
Yeah.
Is that your situation too?
Yeah, certainly part of it.
Part of it, yeah. I'm also a heavy carer. Maybe you could call me a care bear. I don't know. Use the label you want, but
you're more of a care panda,
which is a kind of bear.
Oh, shoot.
Okay. Care kangaroo, I think was what the word you were looking
yes.
for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have a way of dealing with this kind of situation as well, which is that, you know, I take a lot of pride in the work I do. And I actually do tie my ego and my sense of self-worth to the quality of the work that I do. You know, a lot of people say don't do that. But I think what they really mean is don't get so tied up in the details of your work, like the way you indent your code, and like that's your identity. It's like, no. Put your identity, put your sense of self-worth in the value that you produce for the purposes that you produce them, for the users who use your stuff. Make it about them and their outcomes. Great. Okay, so what do you do when things go really wrong? Like when you wrote a bug or you took down production and now you have to go in front of a bunch of leaders and tell them that you took down production. Well, here's what I do. I double down on the caring thing. And I say, all right, I care so deeply about this. I'm going to show you that when I make a mistake, I produce the absolute best postmortem documents you have ever seen. I uncover every stone. I talk about every eventuality. I write a 4-page FAQ that no one will read, but they'll look at and go, holy crap, this guy's thorough. And I give people...
With a 3-page summary of the FAQ.
Yeah, exactly. And I show people my caring through my response to my mistakes. And I got to tell you, I actually had lunch with a former CEO of mine just a few months ago who I worked with for a couple of years. And one of the things he remembered the most about working for me was these incident reports that I would write after something went wrong. And I'm like, look, he knew I was responsible for this stuff. I was the head of engineering at the company. And so he loved how transparent I was, how I would list every mistake I made and what I'm going to do to fix it, and just all like the graphs and the diagnosis and what was the customer experience during this time. So I really doubled down on it, and it paid dividends. Like, he was super appreciative of that.
I think I was going in a similar direction as you went with the postmortem piece, where if you wallow in the failure and the missed expectations and what everyone will think of you, that's no good. That'll send you to a bad place. But this is a great opportunity to learn stuff. And that's something you hear a lot in kind of reliability culture, safety cultures, like kind of resilience engineering, that space. They geek out over stuff breaking, because then you get to understand how things actually work.
Right.
So you've uncovered a failure in the system or in the model that people have of the system. So one way that you can maybe get over this a little bit is say, like, awesome, I get to learn something. I get to learn something about myself. I don't know, I wasn't careful enough with this bug, and why wasn't I? And dig into that and figure out what could you do better next time. Mm-hmm. So it's like a chance to get some lessons. And I think if you show that, that's what you were talking about, Dave. If you show you're not just going to be groveling, apologizing for it, you're going to fix it and get better. I think that anyone worth working for will be pumped about that response to something going wrong.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I don't know. I can't think of a better answer than that, which is when you mess up, which is inevitable, then just double down on how much you care and the pride you take in recovering from the mess up.
At first, I thought you were going to say, when you talked about it before, I thought you were going to say double down on how it wasn't actually a mistake. just don't admit. Like, no, well, prod actually, is up.
The database has not been deleted.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's all there. I see all of the data.
I
know you can't look at my screen.
Yeah, no. You're looking at staging. No, I'm not. That's a good point. And actually, this is a little bit of a problem I've observed in others. I mean, obviously not me, and no one listening to this podcast, or you, Jameson, would ever do
Isn't
this.
Isn't it wild how easy it is to see how others have lots of problems?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is all about your friends and your coworkers. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows that this is mostly about other people. And
yes,
it is tempting, when you care deeply and take pride in your work, it is tempting to sweep issues under the rug or hide your mistakes. But I assure you that the same heart that takes great pride in doing good work will be offended and crushed by hiding that. And, oh man, it's just not a good plan. It basically leads to a world of insecurity, where you feel insecure, you're not confident, you always worry that someone's going to out you. Honestly, it's kind of a path to imposter syndrome. You know, imposter syndrome is actually kind of reinforced by hiding things about yourself that you don't want other people to know. And when you instead you put your mistakes out on display for everyone, it's one of life's great paradoxes, but boy, does it build confidence. It really does. It's done so for me.
It's also so much easier to not have to pretend like things are fine when they're not.
Yeah, like all the living a lie, like what details did I say to who and when?
Yeah.
Keeping my story straight.
Yeah. Don't recommend it.
Yeah, because people will find out. And then if you thought people disliked you for making mistakes before, wait until they find out that you made mistakes and covered it up. It's like heinous.
Cover up is worse than the crime. Isn't that a saying sometimes?
100%. It almost doesn't matter what the crime is if you covered it up.
Yeah, then you lie to the FBI about the crime, and then that's how they get you.
That reminds me of what was the guy's name? Was it Norm MacDonald? Not Norm MacDonald, the comedian who passed away a few years ago. Oh, yeah, Norm MacDonald.
Norm MacDonald did pass away a few years ago.
That was him. I'm not going to say the joke on the air. It's not the most appropriate joke, but if you want to go look at it, it's exactly in the same theme of the cover-up is worse than the crime.
Yeah, I thought what was bad about it was the hypocrisy.
Right.
And he's like, I thought it was the crime.
it was honestly like a real slap in the face for me. I was like, oh, yeah, we get so caught up in this cover-up thing, and it's like, what if you murdered someone? What's worse, the murder or the cover-up? Like, probably the murder, like in this case.
Yeah. Probably not the hypocrisy of pretending like you didn't murder someone.
Yeah, exactly. What a hypocrite. I mean, if he had killed him and got away with it and then not lied about it, you know, then maybe I'd be okay with it. But the fact that he lied Everyone about was it.
An honest murderer.
Oh, man.
A straight shooter, literally.
At least he's true to himself.
Yes.
Don't be that guy. I guess don't. I mean, the thing is, when you are going to eventually murder your production systems, but it'll be manslaughter because it's unintentional. And the sooner you come clean about it, the better off you'll be.
And the hypocrisy is worse in this case.
Yeah, it actually
it's
is.
Down product.
It actually is. Yes. So true.
Yeah. You are unlikely to get fired for deleting prod. You are way more likely to get fired for deleting prod and not telling someone because you were scared that you would get in trouble.
Oh, yeah. So true. And you are way more likely to feel good about yourself for doing an excellent job with a postmortem. The same level of intensity of an excellence you deliver when you write your code, apply that to the postmortem. You're not just a code writer. And I think this is maybe this is the thing that the question asker needs to hear, is that writing code is just one tool in your engineering tool belt of delivering value to your users. And there are many, many other tools you need to get good at. And one of them is writing postmortems, process improvement so these kinds of things can't happen in the future, large scale fixes, you know, systems thinking to fixes to prevent mistakes like this. All of these things will actually produce so much value. And sometimes there's no code involved. Sometimes you just write a bunch of Jira tickets for other people to fix stuff.
Yeah.
And now you're on your way to management. Yeah. A life of Jira ticket excellence.
Yes. All right. Have we answered the question?
Well, I think so. Good luck.
Best of luck. I'll say it again. It's good that you care because I think it can make your work feel more meaningful. So this is the problem is a consequence of you caring, and caring can be good.
That's right. It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. All right. What can people do if they want their own questions answered, Dave?
If you care enough to get your question answered and you want to just test us to the limit, go to softskills.audio and submit the most challenging question you can think of. Maybe you want us to live calculate the 1,000,000th digit of pi. We'll do it. Just put it in that form and we will eventually do it. You can leave as much personally identifying information as you want or as little as you want. We love getting your questions every week. And this form actually doubles as a feedback form. This is a function of us being too lazy to create a separate form. But you can go fill out the Ask a Question form and don't ask a question. Tell us how we did answering your question, and we'd like to read some of those on the air. We only occasionally get these, and I think it's because most people listen to one episode and then never ever come back again. But if you do happen to leave feedback, we'll read it. We love hearing how things went. Sometimes people write in with answers from years ago and say, here's how it went. Once in a very rare while, they say, it went exactly like you said. And most of the time, they have amazing catastrophic stories of doom and bad luck, which is also really fun to read about. So please share.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next week.